Oh, hello everyone. I know your screen panel will say that Dimpner's speaking, but it's actually me. I'm on Dimpner's computer at the moment. And tonight we would have a whole bunch of platinums online, but except they're all down Mooloolaba Bowling Club playing lawn bowls. Poor old little Ian is here doing a webinar. And to tell you the truth, I would probably much rather do this than be playing lawn bowls and drinking beer. So I have a few questions that have come in during the last month, and I'll answer those. I will get there'll be extra questions that will come in, obviously. So you've got the questions panel there that you can ask questions, and they'll fly into me and I'll see them. Let's have a good start at this, hey? So I might increase the panel size here so you can see a bit more of the writing. Let's go to 150. Okay, so let's start. Hi, Dimpner Ian. We have cleared 90% of our debit. So obviously you paid down credit. And we have had our PPR at 550 to 590 on the market to sell as it is, as it's a large home for two people on 4,000 square metres rural block, but we are finding that Marklet is struggling to meet our requirements to sell. Okay, so if it is struggling to meet the requirements to sell, you've got to ask the question around the four things that contribute to the selling of a property. So that's the price, the agent, the product, or the market, one of those four. There is not much you can do about the market, and I think Michael and Terri-Ann, I would know that your place is probably pretty schmicky, knowing who you are, and that it's not the product. The question will be, is it the agent? Well, I like to do a test on my agent. I like to do a bit of a I like to get my friends to ring up the agent and ask some questions and see what the responses are. You know, are the buyers negotiable? Do you think the price is too high? Do all those sort of questions to see what sort of feedback you get. And that will tell you whether the agent's a good agent or not. They should be trying to get them in the door and run them through the place. So we've talked about the product. We've talked about the agent. The market. You know, the market's up or down. You can't do much about the market going up or down and what people are looking at. Now, at the same time, consumer sentiment's pretty good, and it, you know, the market is strong. So the question will be, if you've got no control over the market, the only other thing that you can control is the price, and that's the price coming down. Now, in the rest of your question, it says you'd like to move forward by being cashed up to buy properties to buy, renovate, subdivide, sell off, and a new build without borrowing straight away. Okay, so what is the issue with borrowing? So is the issue with borrowing that you don't have income? In which case, if you don't have income, then, you know, a sale will be the thing that you need to do simply because you're going to have to do deals with cash.
I'm doing two things at once. So the question will be, okay, so you want to do cash deals. Is it because you're worried about borrowing or because it's serviceability?
So then you go on to say, are we better to revalue and borrow now? So it sounds like you can borrow and move forward with similar strategies and consider selling as market gets stronger in North Queensland. Now, the end of the day is that the real wealth comes from accumulating, right? So knowing that you could drop your price to sell your property, but you don't have to sell your property is another thing. If you can revalue, and you can take that money and go off and do other stuff, then great. Remember that you don't really have a big choice in who's going to buy a property. What you do have a choice in is if your property doesn't owe you a lot of money, then you are probably going to get to the point where if it doesn't owe you a lot of money, you could move out of it and rent it and it would be cash flow positive. Go on and do another PPR. Obviously, that turns your property into an investment property. You'd have to revalue it there. Yes, it's in your own name and there is some risk. So you want to make sure that that risk is
taken up with insurances, and also that you've got the highest debt that you can possibly get on that property. So I will say that the answer to that there is, if you can't sell it, then a reval to get you moving forward, so that you can get a line of credit and invest in other properties, is the best way to do. If you're going to wait for the property to sell so you can move forward, and there's so much of everyone's life that gets taken up with getting market ready and moving forward. So I would say, if you can't sell it and you can get a revaluation and you can get a line of credit out of it to move forward, then that's probably the way that I would go if I was you. And remember, I forgot my disclaimer here. Remember, I'm a plumber and builder by trade, as you are, Michael, and that anything I say here is purely my opinion of my experience investing in property. And what you need to do is not take my opinion and go and make financial decisions on that. You have to go off and talk to the qualified people around you. You've got Investor Accounting Network, you've got your strategists that are around there, and you've also got Pacific Law to be able to ask all the questions that you need to do in super and all the residential stuff that I'm talking about tonight. Now, I don't have any control over the sound or the connection in the internet here. You know, I wish we were in Korea where we had great internet connections, but we don't. And so I'm in Dimpner's office trying to do my best here. So if it drops out, remember that this is a recorded webinar and you can always come back and listen to it later. Hi, Dimpner. What's your position on first home buyer's grant? It can only be given to natural persons, that is, no trust. You have mentioned that the PPR is the only exception to the rule of never buying in one own's name. Can you please clarify, elaborate with regard to the grant? Okay, so essentially the grant has to be taken with you buying a house in your own name. And when you buy a house in your own name, you can take up the first homeowner's grant, and that changes from state to state and across the country depending on what governments have put in as initiatives to bring forward the extra need and revenue for first-home buyers. Now, Dimpner has said quite openly, yes, there is tax advantages to buying in your own name. The tax advantages are that it's a capital gains-free exemption if it is solely for the purpose of your own home. So I went into that screencast there. I understand what they're saying. If you buy in a trust, no, you can't take the capital gains exemption. Though, if you go back to your recorded bootcamp DVDs, the first DVD when Derek is on stage with Dimpner, they talk about a contract of will where you can buy a home inside a trust and treat it as your PPR by setting up a lease, and then the breaking of a lease will initiate a capital gains-free style of payback, let's call it. So I'm not going to explain it to you because, as I said, I'm not qualified to do that. You can go on to the first DVD on the recorded bootcamp, which is on the Ultimate website as well, and you can work through that. What's your position on investing in ex-old aged care facilities? Now, I did have a look at that property too, and I probably should get rid of that so no one else can find it. I had a look at that property. It looks like a nice, tidy look property. It looks like it's obviously an aged care facility that no longer is running because I didn't see any people in it. And the question will be, can you divvy it up? Can you strata title? It was on two titles. Can you strata title the units off? Can you run it as a boarding house? It is by the ocean, so can you run it as a motel-style thing? What it is definitely going to be is a commercial purchase. It wasn't a high-end purchase, so I think people could get into this one and make a lot out of it. There'd be extra space in there. Again, can you divvy it up? If you can divide it up and strata title it and sell it off individually, maybe it's worthy of doing that, remembering that there may not necessarily be a market for smaller units. So the question will be, if you can divide it up into strata title it, that the fire rating is in place, that you can do everything that you need to do to pull a unit block apart. At the same token, what is the demand and need for holidaymakers in the area? What's the demand and need for boarding houses for the low end of the market? Being in Victoria, you know, it's a great little there's some great rules down there, which I'll talk about. There's another question I'll talk about later on with rooming houses down in Victoria, which, you know, you can use to your great potential. So it's just the way it is. I think that you need to do some background research. Not running an aged care facility, well, I'm not sure about that. I think we do have an aging population, but I also think that you have to have a really decent experience base to do that. I know some people that do run aged care facilities, and it's no run in the park, I can tell you that. They need to know their stuff. As for a cheapie, buying a house on a large block that can be subdivided with the intention of selling off the vacant blocks, how hard is it to sell off the vacant blocks? The latest vacant sale was about a year ago. So I've actually scrubbed out the suburb that you've mentioned there. I do know the suburb. It's in Victoria, and it's a very low-end suburb, as in when I say that, I mean by price. It's usually in these regional towns, there's no value in subdividing and selling off land. There is value, though, in subdividing and putting a transportable on, or putting a modular on, or an old house on there, and revaluing or selling off if there is a market to sell off. So to give you an example of that, I'll give you three examples of it. Here we've got a Western New South Wales house. And in this Western New South Wales house, these are deals that have been done by one student in recent times. And for this one here, they paid $30,000. Actually, they paid $20,000 for this. They renovated it. They spent $105,000. It was two houses. So you can see this block of land goes through from one road to the other. And there was two houses on it. They were in total disrepair. Now, this student went in, fixed one up, revalued, fixed the other one, revalued. In total, including the purchase price, there was $105,000 spent, and the revalue came in at $160,000. Now, at 80% of $160,000, you would have got your money back. Let's quickly work that out because I'm no mortgage broker. At 80%, you get $128,000. So you spend $105,000. You get $128,000. You've grown your equity. You get you now got a value of property of $160,000. That sits there nicely, positive cash flow, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 a year, whatever it is. And these style of deals, if you sold it, would give you money. So this one the student kept. The other two that I'll show you, he sold. So here we've got one here, Central West. I'm not going to tell you the towns because you know it doesn't change what you're doing. It needed a reno, so paid 70 for it, maybe 60. Paid 60 for it and did a 10K reno. So, and when I talk about a renovation, what you're looking at here in this photo here of the bathroom is the fitted finish renovation. They didn't bother retiling. All they needed to do was tidy up the walls and give it a paint job. And it would rent for $200. So here we are. We've spent $70,000. Rent it for $200,000, that meets the rule of two. You could have kept that, revalued and gone on. They sold it for $110,000. Now, I've checked the buy price and the end price so that I can confirm that it is the prices there. And so, look, in that one there, you pay the tax that you need to pay because they sold it a year after. The reason they sold it a year after so they could get a 50% capital gain exemption. So they would have made $40,000 less a couple of costs, call it $35,000. They would have had $17,000 of that tax-free, and the other $17,000 they probably paid, I don't know, $5,000 on it. So they would have ended up with 12, 17, probably about 30, 29, 30 grand extra out of that deal by doing it. Then they also did this deal up here, which was Central West of New South Wales. They spent $66,000 in this one, and they sold it for $120,000. So in this one here, you know, you're talking about probably 50, probably 40 grand, and, you know, you've made 40 grand in a year. Now, for some people, and there's another question further on, you could continue to do this, and after 2 years, this would become a wage. You could do this just with cash, if you only had cash, you didn't need loans. Now, this student did do it with cash, and they moved forward with that. Alternatively, where do you find erected houses for sale that can be transported to the site? Is there already a webinar on this type of project? Absolutely. There's a webinar. If you go to the top right-hand side of the Ultimate website, the members website, there is a place there that says that's got a search function and it says members. If you put transportable home in there transportable webinar or something like that and change it from members to posts. You'll see that. Also on your there's a section on the website that has all the postings of every webinar that's been done and what subject what we did it on. Dear Dimpner, I'm a new student and wanted to tell you something funny. Okay, I'll cut to the chase on this one because it's a long one. So sitting at the one-day event, I was listening to you explain something where you were using the Little House diagram with the loan-to-value percentages, and I suddenly discovered the quick way to work out percentages. I remember really having to focus on maths before and distracted by the moment of pure clarity. Natasha, I had a similar event for me back in 2000 and what would have been 2003, 2004 maybe, and I just started my full-time TAFE teaching job, and one of the other TAFE teachers who was a property investor, still is a property investor, took me to the side and he started working out percentages in front of me, and I didn't realize how simple it was. I didn't realize all of a sudden he was calculating in front of me. He was calculating the interest per year and all these sort of things where the penny dropped for me. And from that moment on, I thought, oh, Jesus, math stuff's easy. And for some of you, I know that maths is not something that you like. It's something that you probably hate for a lot of you. But if you close yourself down to the fact that you need to learn it, then you're never going to learn it. And I can tell you in this game, you do have to work numbers. It's a numbers game. If you don't know how to work numbers, you're going to have someone next to you that can do the numbers. And in the end, they're going to have to explain them to you anyway. So by the fact that they're going to have to explain it to you, you're going to get better at it. So the plain and simple thing is, if I'm no good at numbers, just get over it, honey. Let's get moving forward. And Natasha, I'm glad that you had that moment for you to be able to work out that that maths isn't that hard. And that's what we're all about. Howdy, just wondering at what level do you start to engage town planners and other professionals? Would you use services when doing a splitter and build at the rear, or would you just use a project builder for that? Cause I have a pre-Dimpner started. I have started this process and construction is already underway, so too late for me. I have, however, arranged for the underground power connection upgrade of existing dwelling, underground power, water corp, headworks, landscaping, initial site works, clearing black, temporary fencing, all of that. Well, to me, Mike, it sounds like you either have had experience or you've had a good crack at it, and I'm glad to hear that you have had a crack at it. Whether you're efficient at it this time round or the next time round will be seen. I think the answer to your question is going to come down to what's your level of experience. For me, if it's a council that's relatively easy to work with, I'll do my own town planning. I won't do my own drawings, but I'll do my own design and I'll work with my designers to put it together, and then I'll then go out and start doing the building. I start doing the build prices. I don't do my own builds anymore. And so now I just go, all right, well, let's think about it this way. If I was first starting out and I had no idea, well, I don't think you've got any choice except to use a team of professionals around you and get to know them and get to know what they do and help them out and look and tell them that you want to learn, that you understand what's going on. You just don't want the job done. For some of you, you just want the job done. For others, you want to go, well, I actually want to understand. Now, when I work with some students, I say to them, well, what I want you to do, I want you to know every step of the process, because at some point in the future, someone's going to let you down and you're going to have to pick up the ball and run with it. I had a conversation, with the students. We go to the point where we go, well, all right, we want to get the full building application. I want you to talk to the engineer. I want you to get the energy efficiency. I want you to go off and get the soil tests. I want you to go off and do the council application and help the plumber get the council application through to the plumbing. All those sort of things. And a builder rang me and says, why are you getting these people to do this? And I said, because I have had this issue where someone stops doing what I need to be done in the time that I need to get it done. And sometimes you just need to take over and do it. And so really it's question A, can you afford to bring all these people in? Two, can you afford not to? Because if you go and make the mistakes and take the time, you might end up worse off. And three, is the council worthy of having a play with if you know and you do have the experience to do it? Generally, nowadays, I just throw everything at my professionals and go, just put it together for me. This is what I want. And I just manage them. Hi, Dibner. We've paid off most of our PPR and now have a sizable amount available in our line of credit, which I want to have available to use deposits on investment properties. Our PPR loan is in our personal names. Is there any way I can protect these funds from litigation? Well, yeah, there is. Again, Dibner explains how to do that when in the home learning package. And it's about gifting it to your piggy bank trust. Now, by gifting it to your piggy bank trust, it can then be lent out as deposits for other properties. The only problem with that is the interest on the money will not now be a tax deductible event to where you're sending it to. Again, I'm not an accountant and Dibner teaches that. So, but let's think about it the other way. If you didn't gift it to your trust and you had a point where someone wanted to litigate and sue you and take you for what you're worth, they would look at your property. And if you had a loan that was up at 80% or wherever it was, so let's say that your loan is at 50%. You get a revaluation, you take it up to 80%. So 30% of the value of your property is now a line of credit so that you can invest. Now, whether you've got that 30% of line of credit out or not, if a solicitor went and did some searches and went to look to sue you, they'd look at the value of your property. They'd look at the value of the loan. Now, they wouldn't know that the value of the loan's at 50%. All they would know is that there's an 80% loan on that property. And so the lawyer would then have to toss up of whether it's worth trying to sell up your property so that they can get some money out of it. And if there's an 80% loan against it, they probably wouldn't do it. The other thing, obviously, is make sure you don't do anything illegal or fraudulent. Make sure that you've got all your insurances up and that you're protected against any choice of litigation in the future. Hi, Dibner. Can you please share with what property strategy Dibner's son used when he purchased his first property? If it was no money down deal, option JV, etc. Okay, it wasn't. I just saw one of the comments come in. It wasn't a no money down deal. No, it wasn't. It was a rooming house in Victoria, and Justin is he's a very intelligent young boy. The strategy was he grabbed the keys to Dibner's sports car and he said to his mum, if you don't give me some money and buy me a property, I'm going to take your car. No, he didn't. That's just a joke. Sorry, I can't help myself. I'm so hilarious. Now, what Justin did was saved up enough for a deposit and put that towards, so he went and got a job and worked. And he put that towards a purchase of about $300,000 in a property that needed about $30,000. So at an 80% loan, he'd need $60,000, $70,000 with costs, and then he had to spend $30,000. So he needed about $100,000 to get into that property. And he did the approval to turn it into a rooming house. He then gets someone else to manage it at 30%. This is in Victoria. And at that 30%, he gets a really great return. It's over 20 grand passive income. Now, people say, oh, you pay someone 30% to manage the property. Well, this is a property that would normally rent for $350 and it's renting for well over $1,000. It's nine rentable rooms. So, you know, when you're talking about more than tripling the income coming in for the property, 30% is pretty good. So, you know, that's all good. Okay, let's move on here. Dear Dibner, we'd be able to offer some advice. I spoke to Dibner about this one and this is what she said. So I have an aging father-in-law who has purchased accommodation in a retirement village. The family are in the process of selling his unit, which is a value of $600,000 and there's no debt on it. There are three children in the family with one brother and one sister being appointed powers of attorney. Their thinking is to invest the proceeds of the property onto purchasing real estate and providing cash flow for ongoing needs. Great. And perhaps borrow against this $600,000 to purchase a few properties with the expectation of manufacturing growth. Okay. They would like to know their father's money is being invested wisely, not just sitting in the bank. Agree totally. So let's see. Okay, let's start from the beginning. So they sell the unit, they get $600,000. Now the three kids could go up and set. They could go on and they could set up a trust where they would be the appointers. All three of them would be the appointers. All three of them would be the beneficiaries, and all three of them would be the directors of the corporate trustee. Now, in that scenario, they're obviously in full control of the property. Now, what they could go and do is they could go and purchase a property with the $600,000 and put it inside that trust. The income, now we're talking about a $600,000 property, which would be debt-free, and it would be earning income, obviously. So let's just talk about major cities. You know, if you bought a $600,000 property in Brisbane, in outer west of Sydney and outer ring of Melbourne, you would probably get 30 grand a year positive cash flow, you would say, quite comfortably, I'd say. All right, so, all right, we're getting $30,000 income comes out of that property every year. And obviously there's $30,000 sitting there in a bank account. And during the year, you would quite simply distribute to the beneficiaries. Now, remember, the father's not a beneficiary. Though, because the kids are beneficiaries, they can distribute to three generations around them, and their father is one generation away. So that $30,000 could go towards the parent, to the father, to look after him in his retirement village, right? So that takes care of the father. That takes care of the fact that there's a property that's growing in value while it's sitting in that trust. Now let's look at revaluing that now, right? So now that we've got the three kids in there as appointers, directors, and beneficiaries, they could go, because they are they don't own the trust, because they run the trust, they could go off to a bank and say, could we get an 80% loan, please, on that $600,000 property? Remembering that all of three of them were probably going to all three of them are going to need a job because you're signing up. All three of you are signing up for a loan. Now, at 80% on $600,000, you get $480,000 as a line of credit against that property. Now, with that $480,000, that could then be lent to other trusts that the same three kids would be able to go off and invest in other properties as well. Now, with the other trust, you'd have to consider whether you set with the $480,000, whether you divide it into three, and each one of the kids takes it off and takes it to their own trust, where they're their own appointer, their own director, and their own beneficiary, and invest in properties. All three of them do it individually. Or they may make an agreement to do it. They might make themselves appointers of all three trusts, but the beneficiary and director might be one of each of them. Long, long way to be able to answer this question. But essentially, yes, that you could do that. The father would have cash flow. And then most people would say, oh, but now that $480,000 mortgage is actually going to bring in interest. Well, no, not really, because the interest on the $480,000 needs to be paid for on the properties that the kids are going to go off and buy. Okay, that's the important distinguish. That's the thing that you have to distinguish here, that it's where they go and buy is where the interest gets paid. So it is legal. It's no problem at all. You just have to look at, you'll have to talk to the professionals to give you some stuff back. I'm a new student and loving it. I love the expertise provided across many fields. I love the holistic approach of your courses. I love the style of teaching your students to fish, and I really like your general design for all students to see. So thank you for the amazing opportunity. I have a unique situation with my PPR that was born out of a one-day workshop of yours that I attended in 2010. I bought a 7-bed house with my brother. It's basically two units. Question is it approved two units? And, you know, that's always my question. It was a 3-bed house that the previous owner extended. We purchased it for $465,000. I put $100,000 in and my brother put in $20,000. The loan and title in my name, as my brother didn't have a good credit rating, and I love him and was helping him out. Anyway, our agreement is to share all expenses and split any profit 50-50. Okay. Yeah, all right. Well, you know, I love my brother too. I'm not sure I would have given him that deal. I think you probably should have got a bit more. But that's what a deal is between two people that agree with it. I was retrenched early this year after some soul searching, have decided to be a full-time property investor. That's a big decision, I have to say. I luckily and conveniently refinanced some other neutrally geared investment properties before I was retrenched, and you've got a line of credit of 150. Great. Okay. My strategy is to flip reno properties in regional areas as income for 2 years so I can have my property investing recognised as a business by the banks to begin borrowing capacity. I can then alter my strategy to focus on cash cows. Fantastic, right? So what you've done here is you've realised that it's probably going to be difficult to get back into the IT industry, especially at the moment. You revalue just at the right time and you've got $150,000. Now, those three deals that I showed you in those PowerPoints earlier in this webinar, are exactly the sort of deal that you could go and get. So if you could do, and I would say those three deals, you would easily do those three deals if you're looking at it full time in the first year. And that would mean that you could, what did they make? They made 40, 30, 128, sold it. So made $70,000 or $80,000 in the first year, and you went off. So now you've turned your 150 into $200,000 after tax. Then you go off the following year, you turn your 200 into 250 or 260, 270, because now you've got a bit more equity to play with. And all of a sudden, you've got 2 years of tax returns of property deals where you're going in and out of. And you've got an income. According to the banks, they will see that as an income because you're running it, and running it through a correct structure as well is probably the thing you need to talk about. Again, you need to set up a you could set up a flipper trust, and which Dibna talks about in her education. And you may also want to run the business. Well, not the business. You don't want to be in the business of the property because you get hit with full gains. But there's a number of ways you can do that. So. Okay, that answers that question. Going back to my PPR, I've got my initial 100K tied up in and potentially another 30 to 50 if sold. I had my health check with Tony, who's also great, and I agree with you, and can't access any of the equity until I have a job. Agree. I mean, to me, if you can get a job and gain the equity, even if it's a short-term job, my thinking is mixed due to the nature of the deal. I can't figure it out. Do some minor renos and sell for money to invest in flips, or keep it because it fits a cash cow criteria of 11,800. You know what? You're gaining $12,000 out of a profit that you own. You've got $150,000 off that you could go and do small little regional chunkers. You know, it sounds like you've thought it out well enough. I'm not sure I'd be giving up a property that's probably a metro property bringing in $12,000 a year. You know, it's only going to go up in value over the next 10 years, over the next 20 years, over the next 30 years, and it's bringing you income in every year. It'd be a silly, I'm not saying it's a silly thing. I think in your situation, if you're happy to go and do regional little chunkers, then go for it. If you're needing to do town deals that are quite bigger, then, you know, go for it. You know, you're talking 4.5% growth over the last 4 years. That's pretty good. So I wouldn't be going on and selling things if you didn't have to, because real wealth comes from accumulation. It doesn't come from flipping properties. So the flipping properties in the regional towns is simply a thing to create an income. Once you created that income, then you'd be trying to accumulate as many as you can. Remember, regional towns, it has to have the ability to sell at the back end if you're going to sell it. Don't go in a town where there's 300 for sale and, you know, or 200 for sale and you're just competing against everyone else. I would like to sort out for you, are you happy with a 50-50 profit split with your brother? If you are, that's fantastic. Okay, have I got any more? No, that's it. Let me go on to the questions that are here now. So let's start at the top. Cameron from Cairns. Hi, Ian. When you're starting with very little cash and are carrying high debt on your properties, what is the fastest and best way, in your opinion, to get into no money down deals? Your thoughts are appreciated. Our servicing is limited and we have been informed by our broker we'd probably not get a loan at this point. Okay, so question is, first you've got to look at your whole portfolio and go, which ones are doing things for me and which ones aren't, and so should I get rid of some? No money down deals. Well, no money down deals are everywhere as long as you go finding them. If you've got little cash, then maybe finding vendor finance. Go down, get onto Investar and have a look at vendor finance style deals where, but you've got no serviceability, so you can't do that. So you'll need 100% vendor financing to get into them. You know, you can do cash flow deals if you've got no little money down. You know, buy a little caravan or something and go and put it on a caravan site somewhere around the country that will cost you, you know, a 10 grand caravan with an ensuite with a little bit of fix up and put it on a pad somewhere where the caravan park will allow you to rent it to someone else. And what's the weekly cost on that, and see how much you could rent it for. You might pick up $50, $60, $70, $80, $100 a week. That's $5,000 a year. It's not going to grow any equity for you. It's probably going to devalue, but it's going to give you cash flow, because that's your question. The question is your question cash flow? Oh, no, you're trying about dealing stuff up. You know, those little chunk of deals. You're in Cairns, you know. There's little regional places around you which still have demand. They're great little towns. I actually think, you know, Dentner says that Metro is probably more solid than regional. Metro is solid and Metro grows quicker than regional, but I think regional is more solid. Like, to get a tenant in there, you've usually got a tenant locked in for a long time, and they just tick over and they do their thing. Now, I'm not suggesting go out and buy regional only, you know, because we've got a mix of everything ourselves. But Metro definitely, you know, it's a good place to be, a good thing to have a dabble with. And Metro and regional is a great place to be simply because if you're new at doing a deal, if you're new at doing a subdivision, if you're new at moving a home onto a block of land, it's probably the best place to start, because if you're going to make any mistakes, it's good to make a mistake on a $100,000 deal rather than a $700,000 deal. And I can tell you, I made a mistake on a $900,000 deal when we first started. That was just the purchase price. And we didn't do well out of that one. So money down deals, you're going to have to ask questions. You're going to have to knock on doors. You're going to have to do lots of stuff. This groundwork is what will set you up. And when you set the groundwork up, you may not see that happening straight away, but in the end, you will have some great movement that happens really quickly. You know, I was watching Will Smith once, and Will Smith, I was talking about his dad, and his dad told him and his brother, knock the wall down at the front, it's all a bit rickety. And they were then told to rebuild that wall. And for most people, they'd see, as you know, this is a 10-year-old kid, they'd see building a brick wall as a huge thing to do. But their father said to them, I don't want you to think about building a brick wall. I want you to think about laying one brick at a time, and lay that brick as best as you can with the best skill that you possibly can right now. And after a while, Will Smith realized that the whole wall got built, but it was built a brick at a time. And so think about those things when you're looking at a deal, one deal at a time. At the end of this deal, can I do a deal after that? That's the most important thing. And is the deal going to service you? Is it going to be the right thing for you? You know, if you've got high debt and you've got properties that are not doing things for you, I had those. I had to be unemotional about them. I was emotional about my properties, you know, and I was willing to make losses on them. We lost $300,000 to sell down our properties, but we were better off with one than seven. So that's what you're going to have to look at. From Joe, we have found a healthy 5-unit over 55 in upcoming area. That's a healthy five unit. Over 55 development, okay, in an upcoming area, but we have run out of equity, short 250,000. Bank wants us to sell a positive gear property to give us the loan. We do not want to do this. We are prepared to bring in others to help with the redevelopment. Then initial calculations returning 588. All up cost to do the development, that land contents, that stamped in it. Any ideas or strategy? Well, I mean, the question is going to be, Well, it seems to me that you're dealing with the bank direct. The question has to be whether you've had a meeting with your strategist, Joe, whether you have had the investor loans guys look at it, and whether they can look at it in a different run. Obviously, being a 5-unit, it's obviously a development, 5-unit development. You can also bring in a JV partner with cash, trying to find them. There's a JV section on the website where you can put it out there and see. I wouldn't go putting any addresses out there, and I'd make sure that you get them to do a confidentiality agreement that they won't steal the property from you. But really, I think you need to talk to a strategist and the brokers to make sure. When you're dealing with a bank, they're going to want to tie you up. That's the whole point. They want to tie you up. They're at the moment, they're controlling you. They're basically saying, we want you to sell that property so you can buy this one. I presume that you're dealing with the same bank. Yes, my partner has been doing the finances, dealing with the bank. I would stay, like I said, you're being controlled by the bank right now. And I think that you should look at getting some advice from qualified people to say that you can get them in different ways, that you can look at different ways to finance that. You know, you might be able to do it with private finance, depending on how good your serviceability is. You know, you're going to pay a higher interest rate, but if you're telling me there's nearly $600,000 worth of profit in it, well, you know, paying 15% is not that bad a deal when you're making $600,000. You're going to make, obviously going to make $500,000 because you're paying a high percentage, but that's okay. Ian, could you please explain the rule of two and what is a simple way to calculate percentages? Okay. The rule of two. The rule of two is the purchase price of the property divided by 1,000 and times it by two. And to do it really simply for you, if I bought a property that was worth $100,000, I would need to get $200 a week rent to make it a positive geared property. So if I, instead of saying $100,000, if I said $100,000 and I knocked the last three zeros off, I'd go 100 times two. If it's a $200,000 property, then I need $400 a week. If it's a $600,000 property, then I need $1,200 a week. If it's a $64,000 property, then I need $128 a week. So essentially, you're talking about the taking the three zeros off the purchase price and then times it by two. Now, as far as percentages are concerned, really easy to calculate percentages. 80% as a percentage when you, so if I wanted to work out what 80% of $100,000 is, everyone knows that it's quite simple to work out that that's 80%, right? But on a calculator, if I went 100 times 0.8, all right, so 80% is the same as 0.8. So if I went 100 times 0.8, I'll end up with 80. So let's talk about 400 times 0.8, I'd end up with 320. I'd end up with 320, right? So that's a simple way. So if it's 70%, it's 0.7. If it's 60%, it's 0.6. So that's the really simple way to work out percentages. From Stephen, if you see Martine tonight, can you please ask her to call home to say goodnight to the kids? Martine is a platinum and she's down at the bowls. Hi, Ian. I wonder, how do you find JV partners, which is my weakness, even after I found a good deal, which was 90% cash on cash return? How do you structure a deal if you're flipping a renovation works by adding value to, do you buy under? Okay. Let's start with the first part of this. Oh, Jesus. Don't answer. I don't want any more questions, please. My throat's already gone. Okay. How do you find JV partners, which is my weakness? Okay. Let's put it this way. You've got a whole JV section out there where you could be finding partners. Now, I'll tell you one thing for sure. Trying to find a partner after you've found a deal is a tough game. Trying to find partners and then finding deals, that's much, much easier. So I would say to you, go out there, put something on the website and say that you're looking for JV partners. Get yourself out there and have a good go at making sure that people see who you are. Now, if you're a quiet person, you're going to have to put yourself out there. You're really going to have to put yourself out there. Now, let me let you in on a little bit of a secret. Most of you know who I am, and if you don't know who I am, you'll probably see me in an event somewhere along the way, okay? I am not the type of person that turns up at a party and is the life of the party. I am quite happy to sit in the corner of a room and drink my orange juice and watch what's going on. I'm not the one that likes to go up and introduce myself to people, and it's something that I had to learn how to do. Now, have I got better at that? Yeah, absolutely. Now I walk down, I'm on a plane, I'm happy to introduce myself to the person next to me. I'm happy to have a conversation with people in a lounge. I'm happy to do all that sort of stuff, but it wasn't something that I was comfortable doing. And I'm probably still not comfortable doing. You know, I was recently, a couple of years ago, standing in the Australian Embassy in Tokyo, and there was one of those, you know, dinner party thingies that you go to, and I was completely out of my zone. I was so uncomfortable. I'm saying to you, if you're not the type that can attract a JV partner, you're going to have to get yourself out there. It's not going to happen. You're not going to sit there and someone's just going to appear and go, hey, yeah, I'm happy to do a JV with me. So put yourself out there, find some JV partners, get a memorandum of understanding or a heads of agreement, get the JV checklist off the Pacific Law website, work out, have cups of coffee with people, have lunches with them, really get to know them, because these are people you're going to be working with. Don't go into them and go, oh, well, I found a deal, let's do a JV together, go off and find a JV and find out that you don't get on. Just the wrong thing to do. Let's find a partner. Let's find the style of deal that you want to do and let's go out looking for it and then work from there. The second part of your question is, how do you structure a deal if you're flipping a renovation works by adding value? Do you buy under a company name? Do you buy GST in and out of this type of deals? Okay, you definitely wouldn't buy under a company name. You'll be buying in a trust that's owned by a corporate trustee. Well, that's run by a corporate trustee, okay? So corporate trustee and trust is where you'd be buying it. You'd be setting up a flipper trust where you're going in and out of the property. And again, go back to your manuals around the trust. Go to your frequently asked questions and they will answer most of that. Yes, you may have to pay GST on the style of renovation, depending on the style of renovation that you do. So, again, go back and find out from the education, the trust section, the asset section, asset protection section, and also on the frequently asked question. And you've got your quote coaches. I can tell you your coaches will be able to answer that very easily. Okay. Where would you find someone to manage a boarding house? Well, we've put an ad in for someone to run our motel on Gumtree. We had a number of people put themselves up, usually husband and wife and couples, usually people that are traveling around. Now, for a boarding house, there's people that do it all day long. If you're providing and on a boarding house, depending on the size of it, you will probably have to have a manager's quarters in there anyway. So most people, there would be a few around. The managers that look after Dibna Sons one are actually some students from Victoria, and that's what they do as their income. They probably make, that's well over $100,000, probably over $200,000 now. Mark Schneider just said, just a Brownlow update, Gary Ablett in front by one vote after round five. Thanks, Mark, you're a legend. Their income's well up over doing that. Gumtree's probably a good place to look for that. Let me see this. Ian, going back to that father-in-law question, resale of father-in-law's property for $600, they will need to... Regarding the sale of the 600 property, first you need to take out the cost of the retirement home. Most cost $300 to $550, therefore very little to invest. Well, okay, if that's the case, then you would have $50,000 to take off and invest somewhere else. To me, I would say that that isn't a lot of money to go off and invest with. So I would say that... let's think about this again. So they had $50,000 left over. Well, I'd try and get him into a retirement village of $300 if you could. That would mean that you could go out and buy a property of $300,000, which would probably give you in somewhere around the 10 in a normal metro deal, $10,000 to $12,000 passive income, and then take the revalue on that. $300 at 0.8 would be $240,000, which they could take off to invest in their own structure the same way that I said before. That's the only way that I could suggest that you do that. $50,000, unless you go and do small regional town chunker deals, like I said before. But that has to create passive income for the father-in-law. So that sort of puts you in a different scenario, different ball game. Have a sit down with the strategist and ask them a question on that one too. From Jody, when money is left to you when parents pass, should it be left under a trust if you have one or individual name? Well, your parents are giving it to you personally, so it's yours. So you have the choice to do whatever you want with it. You can gift it to your trust if you like. But again, remember what you won't get any tax advantages out of the there's not going to be any debt, so the interest doesn't really matter. Look, you could do whatever you want with it. I think in that case there, I would just be making sure that I've got protection against that. It is cash, so it is available for it to be taken. So you would want to go again back to speak to Derek. Derek at Pacific Law would be able to answer that much better than I would, and give you some feedback. But I would definitely say that, you know, you might look at gifting it to your piggy bank trust. And that's in the asset protection section of the course. Listen to the CDs and you'll be able to hear that. From Lynn, hi Ian, I have an investment property in Inner Sydney. I'd like to develop, knock down and rebuild in the future. I'd like to know. There is an access easement on the property. Do I need to keep this when I develop? Is there anything I can do to remove this? That's an extra 1 meter, 1.8 meters extra I can build on. All right, the question is going to be what the easement's for. Is the easement for sewer? Is it easement for stormwater? Is it for an access for your neighbours to get in? Is it an easement that used to be there simply so they could pick up the thunder boxes in the backyard? Being in the west, it's quite possible that that's the case. So I would say to you, first you need to know what the easement is for. And maybe, Lynn, you can tell me if you do know. Just punch it in and tell me what it is. If it is, it's only access. Access for who, Lynn? I'd like to know. Access for you, access for the neighbour. Who's it for? That's the question I have to ask. And then work out from there. So access to the neighbour's house at the back. Well, if it's an easement and it's on your title, and the neighbours have access to it, unless the neighbours agree to lift it, you're not going to really have a say in that. So no is probably going to be the answer to that, unless your neighbours agree to it, and maybe you could buy the easement off them so that they can't use it. But if it's on your title, there's not much you can do about that, unfortunately. Sometimes you do have easements there where they're for future. So I had an easement on a property once which was for stormwater, but the stormwater was never installed, and I went back to council and I requested that we lift the easement. And the reason I got it lifted was simply because it had been, the property after us had been built over, and they could never actually put the easement through anyway. They could never put the stormwater pipe anyway, and on the other side of it, it went to the road, so there was no need for it, and they did allow it to lift. It did cost me some money, but I lifted it. From Jared, I've just been offered a deal where a family want to just walk away from their house for 10k cash. Happy to take over the loan and go from there, not buy and settle. But can you give an overview of the way this would work legally? Happy to take over the loan and go from there. Okay, well, you can do a number of different things. I've set one of these deals up as a call option. So I've taken over the guy's loan. I gave him my motorhome, so that's the equivalent to your 10K, or my motorhome was 30K. I gave it to him for 50. And you could do it that way. You could speak to David Netherton at Pacific Law. He'd be very good at giving you some advice around this. The other thing you could do here is Tim Hart does this vendor finance strategy all day long, and he does the presentation at the three-day boot camp. If you Google PIS Vendor Finance and Tim Hart, H-A-R-T, you will be able to buy his program, and he'll probably give you, if you let him know that Ian and Dipna sent you, he may give you some free time on that. So the vendor finance part of it happens where you find a buyer for this property who has low income and or can't get a loan. And they'll pay a little bit more. So let's say that this property is worth, the loan on it's worth 200, and say the loan's worth 300. You find someone that's willing to buy this from you in 3 years' time, but they can't get a loan at the moment. So what you say to them is, well, what we'll do is we'll sell it to you at $330,000 in 3 years' time. They will give you $10,000 up front now, and you just give that to the family so that they walk away, and then you start charging a bit more interest, and the person that's going to buy the property in 3 years' time picks up the extra costs. So essentially what you're going to do is you're going to take $10,000 from someone that wants to live in that property and give it to the person that no longer wants it. It stays in that person's name. You go through, and the person that's given you the $10,000 to give to someone else then moves into the property. They pay all the maintenance. They pay for the council rates. They pay for insurances. They pay for water. They pay for everything in the property. And on top of that, they move in on a lease. They essentially move in on a lease. That's what you're doing. It's lease to buy. And they are paying you a bigger percentage than what the percentage on the loan is. And you're getting a bit more cash flow. You can also soup that up a bit more so that they pay a bit more and it pays it off the principal at the back end. So that at the back end, you've still got another $20,000 owing to you. So you could along the way say to them, well, tell you what, rather than just paying, you know, let's say that it's 4% on $300,000 and the new person leasing is going to be paying 6%, 2% more, right? So you're getting 2% a year of $300,000 as cash flow. So that's going to be $6,000 a year. And you might say to them, look, if you pay an extra $200 a week for the next 2 years, we'll wipe out the debt at the back end. So now you're getting 10 grand cash flow. So $16,000 cash flow for the first 2 years of this deal, and then it'll drop back to six again. You know, lots of different ways to do this, but vendor financing is the way you want to do it. And I can tell you, Jared, if you ring your two coaches in WA, they are very well educated in this area. They do it all the time and they know their stuff when it comes to that. Yes, you will have power attorneys, you'll have all of that sort of stuff. All the legal jargon that goes with that will be set up for you. Instead of paying a rooming house property manager 30%, what would be wrong with getting a regular agent to do an individual room 8 to 9% and contracting a cleaner privately? Most real estate agents won't want to do it. You're dealing with the lower end of the market. You're dealing with multiple rooms. You've got, you know, there's higher maintenance to it. It's not a standard type of deal. I can tell you that. If you can find an agent that'll do it for 8 or 9%, great, go for it. From Sean, I've just moved from Sydney to Townsville. How are the mining towns at the moment? They're all a little bit flat. So they're in ebbs and flows. You know, you've got some issues around the whole financial market being a bit stale and moving, and there's fear in China about the come off of China. I mean, God forbid that China drops below 7% growth, really. 7% is massive. So, look, it'll be just, last night, I was looking at the history of some of the towns. I went back and looked at the last, where are we? So, 94, the last 20 years of Broken Hill, the last 20 years of Cooper Pedy, the last year, 20 years of Port Hedland, the last 20 years of Moranbah. You know, they're just up and down like yo-yos. And at the moment, we're in a down. And I noticed there's another question coming up, which I'll answer soon. You know, so it's one of those things. At the moment, it's a bit low. They're a bit flattish. I've said it on numerous occasions. There is not many people that can handle the ups and downs and the anxiety that goes with the ups and downs of some of those markets. And so if you're the type that worries and stares at the ceiling over something little, very little, I would say not go into those towns. Definitely on a flat market at the moment. They always come back though. And you know, we always need commodity and there'll be movement. From Mark, geez, this is a long one, Mark. Can you comment on the advantages of using a bank equity trust strategy for asset protection? No, I can't. I'm not going to even try, Mark. Second mortgages and all the stuff with that. That's probably a question that we need to send in for next time so I can get Dibner to comment on that. Too much of a question for me to answer as a plumber and builder. It's definitely going to do put me in a position where it may sound not right. So I'm sorry, Mark, I can't answer that one. Maybe you do need to send it. So if you do need to send your questions in, send it to questions@realestatesuccess.com.au. So that's questions@realestatesuccess.com.au. Hi, Ian. When I did a boot camp, Dimpner also mentioned putting a caveat on title for more asset protection. How would this work? Just I have a few properties which are not 80% lend. I don't wish to get any more top-ups against them as I have enough for a while from our other sources. Well, I'll talk about that in a second. So would the caveat be the trust, and how would your reason for putting a caveat under the title? I'm not sure she was talking about caveats on the property simply to protect the equity that you've got on there. I'm not sure that that's going to help you anyway. The caveat is you, and they'd be suing you if it's in your own name, and they'd go you, right? So that's no good. Now, going back to the point where you don't want to top up, my question to you would be, why not? If you have the serviceability and ability to take your loans to 80%, you don't necessarily... thanks, Wendy. I'll answer that in a sec. You don't necessarily have to use the money, but tomorrow things can change in a second. And we've already had a question tonight where someone lost their job, but luckily they had revalued all their properties and they had $150,000 sitting there so they could go off and do other stuff. Now, the last thing, no one wants to lose their job. No one plans to lose their job. It happens, right? So if you're in a serviceability position where you can top up to 80% or 90%, why wouldn't you do that? One, because it protects the properties, and two, because you can simply go in there and use those funds down the track for other stuff. Now, what you might be talking about is what Dibner talks about with your properties, if they're in your own name, to put them into a contract of will. And again, on the first day of the boot camp, that's where Derek and Dibner talk about that. And you set it up so that there's a contract of will around the properties. At that stage, Dibner says, revalue them all as much as you can, because you're not going to be able to do it down the track for various reasons, and then put a caveat or a contractor will over the top of it. That will mean that that people can't take it, but there is a four-year clawback on that, and that four-year clawback could be will be broken if you have to revalue at some point in time. You know, there's, I won't mention it, but there is other people out there pretending, saying that they're doing this, and I think there's holes in their ones. Again, Derek's your point of call. A caveat over a property can be put on anything. And I do remember in Sydney, we did talk about caveats, and a caveat is more about your protection on someone else's property, not your own property. So if someone, say I did a JV with someone, with a seller, and the seller, to protect me so that the seller doesn't sell it under my nose without me knowing, I go and put a caveat on his property. And that would be an agreement between both of us. Then that way, as soon as he tries to sell it without me knowing, the legal team on the other side will say, hang on, there's a caveat on this property, and it's no good. Geez, I'm not sure if I just got rid of a question there. But we'll go through. We have a rental property in a large regional area in Queensland worth 450 with a debt of 140. We are wanting to buy a rural property in WA for 400 as a PPR. Should we sell the rental, which is positively geared to reduce the bad debt as the new PPR, or keep the rental and use the positive rent to help pay off the PPR? Also, we need to cross securitise to be able to buy the PPR. But if we sold the rental, the PPR would be debt-free, then we would save up for a new investment property. All right. Well, let's look at it. 450, you've got 140 grand debt. If you revalued at 450, well, they're telling you they want to cross it to securitize you anyway. Okay. So you're going to end up with a property. So the question there would be, once you go and buy your PPR, you've cross-securitized, and let's look at it. So I'll tell you what the loan to value ratio will be. So you're talking 450 plus 400 equals 400. So we've got 850 worth of property. Now you're going to have a loan of 140 and 540. So 540 divided by 850 is 63.5% loan to value ratio. So when you buy those two properties, you will have a 63% loan-to-value ratio because you're with one bank. And if you go to that bank and you say, I want an 80% loan, they'll say, no, forget it, right? So they've just tied you up for 63%. If you could go, and I presume that your serviceability is not great, if you could go to two different banks, then the positive geared property you already have would have an extra $220,000 to go off and invest somewhere else. Now, with that 220, You could take it and buy your PPR. The only issue with that is that you're taking money out of an investment property to go and buy a PPR, which means that the interest won't be tax deductible. And then you take out a loan for the rest of it to buy up the extra part of the 400. If it's serviceability, that's the issue. So who are we? Malcolm? Malcolm, can you tell me, and Juanita, can you tell me whether it's a serviceability issue that they want to cross-securitize you? Or is it just because you went to one bank? So if you don't have to cross-securitize, I wouldn't do it. I don't have anything on the screen. I'm reading it off questions coming in, which you can't see. You still haven't answered my question, Malcolm. Why are you cross-securitizing? Because you don't have a job, or what's the story? I need to have the answer on that one. Another bank won't give it to us. Okay. Have you had a sit down with your strategist? Have you had a sit down with the brokers there that can tell you definitely that that's the case? Because it seems to me, yeah, so you still haven't answered my question, Malcolm. Have you had a sit down with your strategist? Have you had a sit down with a mortgage broker that is specialist in this area rather than going directly to the bank? You know, okay, so the question's better answered by the strategist. If your serviceability is no good, they're going to tell you, right? Now what I'll say to this is, I've mentioned it a couple of times tonight, where people are going directly to the banks and trying to get loans with the bank. They're going to tie you up. They want to tie you up. That's their job. Now, if I wanted to get an operation done on my brain, I wouldn't go down to the local doctor and the local general practitioner and ask him to operate on my brain. I go to the person that's a specialist, that's trained in that area, that knows the brains, that knows where all the blood vessels go, and then I ask them the questions, and then I ask them to operate on my head. Now, if I don't, when I interview that brain surgeon and I don't like that person, I don't think it's right for me, I go on to the next one and I find the next brain surgeon until I find the right one. Now, I'm saying exactly the same thing with your strategists and your brokers. Go along. They're specialists in their areas. They've got numbers of different lenders that they can choose from. You've gone to one bank, and I'm giving you a hard time here, Malcolm, right? You've gone to one bank and the feedback you've got is, no, you can't do this. You go back to your bank and the old bank says, yeah, no problem. We'll do this. We're going to tie you up. We're going to make sure that you can't get any money out of this. So I'm saying to you, I would definitely have a sit down with your strategist. If you need to sit down with your strategist earlier, go to the right-hand side of the members website, top corner contacts tab, and try and contact Investor Loan Network and get into them and get in as quick as possible. Hi there, I bought a property in my name and wife 2010 doing a subdivision, adding two houses now. How can I pass the 2 new houses to trust structure? Okay, the question here is, the cheapest way to do it right now is, it's in your name, when the two blocks are your, and adding two houses now. So have you done the subdivision, Everton? I want to know. Has the title already been done? And you're already doing the two houses, which means you've got finance. So I presume you've already got finance now, have you, on the two houses? Just answer that for me, Everton, if you could. Yes, okay. The best thing would have been to do when you did the subdivision and then you created two separate parcels or three separate parcels of land. The cheapest thing would have been to move that land into the trust at that point in time, simply because the value of stamp duty was low then. Now you've got two houses going on there, the value of the property's gone up, and to put those properties into your trust now would be at the end of the build, because you're going to have to do it at the end of the build, would then cost you more money because of stamp duty costs. You've also have to take into consideration that you'll be paying capital gains tax on it, on the gain. So the question there will be, you know, do you sell down to minimize your risk? That's a question on numbers. Do you sell down to make a positive cash flow? Do you keep them in the way it is and make sure that you're structured well, that you're insured well, and that you've got as much debt on the property as possible to stop someone coming and taking it from you? From Fiona, what do you determine as metro versus regional? Okay. I asked this question of Dipna, I think this weekend on stage. I think she says 100,000 maybe is probably the point where you tick over as a big regional town. 50,000 to 100,000 is a big regional town. Above that, you're starting to look at something that would be more metro. Now, for me, metro, I would sort, you know, talking about the eastern states, Sydney, Brisbane, and Melbourne, I would consider anything outside of 100 Ks from the city, maybe. I would consider, you know, not to be metro. You're now pushing on the outer ring. But then again, you know, you look at Brisbane, you go 100K and then you've got the Gold Coast, which is a quite, that's obviously a metro area. It's a tough question on what you would consider that to be. So I would say that it's a toss up. It's a balance between population versus the hub CBD sort of area. You know, I definitely wouldn't consider, the Gold Coast to be regional. Would I consider Tweed Heads to be regional? Well, it's sort of pushing the edge, even though it's not that far and it is fairly well built up. You know, and I do think from memory that Dimna Creek considers Toowoomba to be a regional town. You know, it's an hour and a half from Brisbane. It's up in the hills, and but it's still got a lot of development going in there. Tough question. I'm thinking I'm got close to maybe answering it. I have equity and I can use my grandparents if possible. What are you going to use them for, poor little fellas? Sorry, let me go back to that. If possible, I have low, no serviceability. What's the best strategy I can begin with? All right. You have equity. You can't draw it out because you've got no serviceability. Do you, if your grandparents had a job, I doubt that that's the case because even if they did have a job, the banks won't look at them. So if your grandparents have cash available, then you could use their cash to go off and start creating those little chunk of deals and creating income so that 2 years down the track, you get to the point and you would then be able to create an income for yourself. I would like to see that you know, that some of the toughest things I have to say to people is, I know you don't have a job and I know that you don't want to go back to work and then you don't probably don't want to work or you can't go back to work. But what is something that you can do? Quite like for you, you have equity. If you went to back and you found something that you could do a job with, which was a salary job for a long enough time to be able to revalue your property and extract some equity so you could go off and do some investment, then wouldn't that be the best thing so you could move forward quicker? Because I can tell you with low serviceability and not much money to move forward. Now, when I say not much money, you've got equity, but you don't have much money to liquid money to move forward and do anything with. So that means you're going to have to work with your grandparents' money or you're going to have to be the worker in a JV partner, which is possible. Anyone can do that. It's just, you know, that's just the way it is. And so saying as it is, that's what I'm, I think you either need to go off and get a job for a short period of time or you need to be the working partner in what you've got, create some cash flow and some serviceability so that you can get money out of your own property. All right, I can only answer a few more before my throat cucks it. So I was looking to do a JV chunk deal as I'm lacking in equity. However, I may have found a deal that with a good reno will positive cash flow and give me a chunk of equity and likely good growth. And there any ways I can use a JV partner to get into the deal and how do I make it worth their while if I tend to keep the property? Am I just being greedy? Okay, agreement between two people is an agreement between two people, regardless of whether someone else thinks it's fair or not. So let's say that you go into a deal, you JV partner, what are you using the JV partner for? Like this is a really, just let me have a look. It's a low-end property and need about 50K for deposit and reno. The percentage thing I worked out. Okay, so let's say, Tessa, I presume I am lacking in equity. Okay, so you've got serviceability. All right, let's look at it this way. JV is to fund the renter. Okay, let's look at it this way. Have you got serviceability, Tessa? That's the question I need to know. So, yes, okay. Well, let's look at it this way. You've got serviceability tester. I presume you're going to be running the deal yourself, and you're going to find a JV partner that has some cash. All right. You've got serviceability and low equity. So you find someone that's got cash. You go off and find a low-end deal, which you told me you've already found. You do the renovation, and you come out the back end. So let's use the figures on that other one there. On the ones that we looked at earlier. Let me bring it up actually, so then we can use it as an example. Okay, so let's take this deal here, right? It's a $66,000 deal. It was, I can't remember exactly, but in total it was $66,000. So there was $40,000 purchase, or maybe it was, how much was it? Let me have a quick look. So they paid $56,000 for this deal and they spent $10,000 on it. So call it $70,000, right, by the time everything was done. So you've spent $70,000. The deposit and the renovation money came from your JV partner. You provided the serviceability. And in the end, you take a valuer out there, and the valuer, they sold it for $120,000, but just say you were to keep it, right? A valuer then says, well, it's $120,000 that we think it's worth. And the bank says, we'll give you a loan at 80%. Now, let's start with this. You spent $70,000 and you now have $120,000 is what the value is. So you've had an equity increase of $50,000. Is that right? Yeah, $50,000. So you could decide with your JV partner to split the gain that you've made, 50-50, right? So you go off, you say to the bank, so this one would be, it's probably easier to buy this in your own company and trust and have a JV contract with the money partner, right? So you go off, the money partner gives you their money, they do their stuff, you've end up making a $50,000 gain. Now, going back, it's cost us $70,000 for this deal. We go and ask the bank for an 80% loan of $120,000, and that they'll give you $96,000. So with that $96,000, you would pay your partner back the money that they're owed. You would then say, well, it's cost us $70,000. They've given us $96,000. So $70,000, I've now got $96,000. Now I've got $26,000 more as part of this whole deal, and 25 of it has to go to the JV partner. Now, you're not going to get anything out of this deal except that you'll be able to keep it. You would have got into this deal with no equity at all. So you essentially will have a $96,000 loan on it for a $120,000 property. Now, $96,000 times 0.06 divided by, so 96,000 times 0.06 divided by 52. So it's going to probably cost you about $110 a week. On the rule of two, you would have to get $200 a week, and $220 a week is what they were getting just after the renovation. So that would be a positive cash flow deal. It would have cost you no money, and there's probably 1,000 people I lost there in talking about the money and how it worked. But I can say to you, if it was a $70,000 spend, $120,000 in value, you'd get a loan at 96, so you've got an extra $26,000. You'd pay your JV partner the $25,000, which was half the profit. They're out of the deal. They're happy. They got their money back plus an extra $25. You've now kept a property, positive cash flow. You'd probably go off and do another one with the same one. And you'd be accumulating these little cash flow chunkers, and they'd be bringing you $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 a year. Every now and then you'll do a good one that will bring in larger amounts of money and you'll be laughing. Okay, let me get rid of those. Hi, Ian. The percentage thing I work out was, e.g., 80% of 500. Yeah, 8 times. Yeah, that's fine. That's another way of doing it. Hi, Ian. I'm so far underwater for my property in Collinsville. Any ideas? Market is saturated with rentals and properties for sale. There's not a lot here. You know, I'm feeling pain in a few properties myself. I do have exposure in mining. Do I have the temperament for that? I can handle it, but that's because I've got Metro as well. So the question for you, Tanya, will be, all right, so Collinsville, I presume your property's empty. What is it that you can do to get someone in that property? Can you put ads in Gumtree? Can you go up there and put some notices around? Can you ring all the businesses that you think work in the town? You know, you do have Alpha out there that have made announcements that they're, you know, going ahead at Alpha, at Darney Mining, and the, you know, the railroad that's coming through will affect Collinsville, and that's all a positive thing, but that's not right now. So right now you have to ask yourself, if I was someone that was wanting to rent a property in that town, is my property the most attractive to someone? You know, and you might say, well, you know, I can only rent it for $200 a week. To be able to get a tenant. If so, you know, you don't have a lot of lookers sometimes in these towns. So if that's the case, do you go in there and say, well, I'm getting nothing at the moment. Getting $200 a week is better than getting nothing. I've seen people try and negotiate prices and not drop rents and do all that sort of stuff. You know, I've seen some funky things being done in recent times. I've seen people put two cases of beer in the fridge as part of the first rental. I've seen them give 1 month rent free, 2 months rent free, all that sort of stuff going on and working from that. You know, I think like me, you know, I've got three empties in mining towns at the moment. And that's the issue with empty properties. When they're full, you've got positive cash flow. When they're empty, you've got negative cash flow. And so it's almost like a two-thirds, it's like a two-thirds turnaround for some of our properties. But that's what you play. That's the game we play in mining, you know, and you have to be in the position where you work that. And, you know, I can't take anything away from your pain. I know what it feels like because we go through it in the lean times, and we go through some great times as well at the same token. I can access cash when, so this is from Tom. I can access cash when it has been lent to company from a trust. I can access cash when it has been lent to a company from a trust. It won't be a trust itself. I think you're not understanding the whole structure, Tom. I'd ask you to go to the frequently asked questions and go through the whole point again and work from that. And then look at and try and get some understanding. So in the frequently asked questions, they go through the trust structures. The company will never go for a loan. The company is just sitting there, and it tells the trust what to do. So the company tells the trust what to do. Geez, we must be late now. It's very late. I'm going to finish very soon. Okay, I'll just see if there's any interestings on there. Just looking through there. There is one here on a 457 visa, and I think I spoke to you, Paul, maybe. I'm not sure. Look, and 350 in the bank, 35,000 in the bank, 35,000 in the bank. Well, Paul, you would probably be a really good JV partner for the last person that asked for a cash partner, because you could, with that serviceability, she would have the ability to use you, Paul, so she'd have the serviceability to buy a property like that. You would have the cash to be able to help her out to get into the property, do the deal, and at the back end, you'd get your 35 grand back and a little bit more. Now, remembering, in any investment, regardless of whether it be property or anything that you do, you have the risk of gaining and you have the risk of losing, okay? There's no guaranteed gaining here, and so be aware of that. On the 457 thing, I don't have enough information and knowledge around that. I do know that Derek from Pacific Law has really talked to a few people about that. And the question would be there, but I think you'd be a good JV partner for that one. There's a JV section on the website that you should probably be able to talk to people about. Hi, Ian. Can you add a granny flat to a property that is your PPR in New South Wales? Absolutely you can. depending on if you want to do it through a private certifier, all you need to do is Google private certifier in your suburb, get them to do a to look around. The other thing you can do is go to grannyflatbuilders.com, grannyflatbuilders.com. That's a DIBNA student who knows his stuff, and you can ask lots of questions around that. And they will be able to lead you in the right direction. Anywhere in New South Wales, you can put a granny flat on. It's the difference between whether you can go through a private certifier or whether you have to go through the council to do it. Okay, thanks, Mark. Hi, Ian. Can you please provide me with some details on modular homes? We briefly spoke about it at the boot camp. Thanks. If you go back to back about a month, 2 months ago, there's a webinar there on doing business in China. Watch that. If you are interested in that, contact the company Wenhua, and we can work from there. I actually have been in China for the last – I was there for about 3 or 4 days just working through out and doing what I needed to do there. We've been told by every bank in town. I'm sorry. You've been told by every general practitioner in town what they want to do to operate in your brain. I'm asking you to go and see a brain surgeon. So, they may say exactly the same thing, but I do want to know that their opinion is correct. That's all I wanted to, that's the point I wanted to make. If you want to change strategist, you can simply ring Scott from Investor Loans, find the contacts. You can work from that. Pierre's always got good questions. At what stage of development would you say that it's safe to move on to purchase the next deal? E.g., my current development, I estimate that I'll have all of my money invested back in my pocket by the first construction loan drawn down. So is it safe to use the money to purchase the next deal straight away, or would you recommend waiting for a certain period of time? I just want to know from you, don't ask me any more questions, guys, because I'm not going to answer them. Okay, so for my current development, I estimate that I will have all of my money invested back in my pocket by the first construction loan drawdown. So the question for me will be, what happens if you commit yourself somewhere else and you don't, and that money back in your pocket is needed to finish this deal? And I can tell you I've been in that situation, because you get hit with left field stuff all the time. I would like, me personally, unless, I always want to make sure I've got enough of a safety buffer to come up against it. Now, a safety, you might say, well, how much of a safety buffer do I need? You know, when I first started, I thought $10,000 enough. I thought zero was enough, really. And now I look at myself and I go, well, you know, it's not enough. I need more for myself right now to be comfortable to know that if I do have empty properties, I need to cover those. So I need, those rainy days do come along. So I would say that I would be hesitant if it was going to chew up all your funds when you get your drawdown. I would be hesitant to do it myself, having come from my experience and my opinion of that. Do you have any crystal ball comments on rents that are likely in Western Sydney in the next 12, 24 months? Well, we've got a shortage of housing. I can only see it going upwards. So when house prices go up, people can't afford to buy. They have to go and rent somewhere. Because their rents will dry up, rents will go up, property houses will steady, rents will continue to rise because there's a lack of rentals. It'll get to the point where rentals are now more expensive than actually going to for the cost of buying a house. People will then move across to buying the houses. Rentals will stagnate. The property prices will increase in metro. I can only see an upward movement in that. That's my cracked crystal ball talking there. Okay, Tessa's asking for Paul's details. Tessa and Paul, you need to get onto the JV section and put yourself up and maybe talk to each other. I can't possibly say Tessa Smith and Paul Phillips, you shouldn't be talking to each other, but you could private message each other on the website. Got away with that one, didn't I? All right, so... Joe and Angie, I see you. Thanks, everyone. Have a good night. For any other questions for Q&A, questions@realestatesuccess.com.au. That's questions@realestatesuccess.com.au. Have a great night, and we'll catch you next time.